We're so close to the Pentagon. Sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the all-new Warbird Radio Live channel. We're happy to be back on the air right across from the runway at Washington Reagan International Airport. Be sure and tune in Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern each week for Warbird Radio Live, followed by a new episode of one of our top-tier shows like the R.C. Scale Builder Show, Hartman & Hines, Over the Front, and the all-new Texas Warbird Report and Wings Over New Zealand Show. Listen, this station is all about community, so please join up with us on Tuesday nights and call in and become part of the fun and part of the family. Thanks again for tuning in, and join us Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Welcome to the Wings Over New Zealand live show here on Warbirds Radio for October 2015. I'm your host, Dave Homewood. It's great to have you all listening. Once again, beaming in via satellite from Melbourne, Australia, is my co-host, Grant McCarran. Hi, Grant.
Hey, Dave. How you doing, mate?
Good, good. It's getting sort of springy, isn't it? It's getting to that time of the year when people are starting to fly and we're getting all the air shows coming up. It's a good time of year.
Oh, it certainly is, mate. Although I must admit, it feels like we've gone straight from a very brief spring right into summer, as we've had 30-degree days and things like that already. It's a little unseasonably warm for October, shall we say, but lots of fun, really enjoying it.
Oh, great. Yeah, it hasn't been that hot here. It's actually we've had quite cool evenings, that sort of thing, so it's good. Just before I go any further, I just want to say, Matt is always telling me that we're talking to him from the future, and I just wanted to report that so far, because we're here in New Zealand and Australia, we're on the 21st of October 2015, and so far there's no sign of Marty McFly and Doc in their DeLoreans. So, Matt, we might be in the future, but we're not quite up with it yet. So
thanks, Dave.
How about you, Grant? Have you seen him over there?
No, I Marty McFly. Seen those two characters, but I have seen a DeLorean or two in Australia. But not since the Avalon Air Show. That was the last DeLorean I saw.
All right. Okay. Don't forget tonight that we're live and you can call in on Skype via the address is Warbird Radio, or you can phone us on country code 1-478-787-4768. A little later on, we'll be hearing from Errol Cavett, and then we'll bring on our live guest, Glenn Turner.
And Dave, something's going on with your microphone. Either that or it's Marty McFly scratching from under the table. I'm not sure what it is, but...
That's
better now. Yeah, that's better now. It was Marty McFly, I think.
It must have been.
I think it was Dave's manly stubble rubbing on
yes,
the microphone.
Yes, you're probably right. His man beard. Yeah. Next thing you know, he's going to be hunting ducks in Louisiana.
I had a shave this morning.
There you go. Much, much nicer, Dave. Now, back to your show.
Thanks, producer Matt.
You're very welcome.
We're going to be bringing on... we'll have a pre-recorded recording with Errol Cavett, and then we'll bring on Glenn Turner. But first, we'll just go into the news of warbirds and other military aviation happenings around New Zealand. The big news just recently has been the sale of the former Royal New Zealand Air Force Bell Uruk-hai helicopter fleet, the UH-1Hs. Three of the airframes have been retained in New Zealand as static displays. One of them's gone already on display at the Air Force Museum at Wigram in Christchurch. Another one's gone to the Air Force Army Museum at Wairu, and the third one is staying at Ahakia, and it's going into Brendan Deer's hangar for the time being, and that's Brendan, who was on our show last time. The rest of the aircraft have been sold overseas to a company in the USA called Dakota Air Parts, which is rather sad that they're leaving the country, and after 50 years' service to New Zealand and being a real icon of the skies. So, and it's quite disappointing that none of them are going to be retained here in flying condition. The Warbird guys tried to get one and didn't manage to get a tender. So if anyone out there can reverse that and manage to get us one to keep flying in New Zealand, I'm sure that we'd love to hear from you, and so would Frank Parker from New Zealand Warbirds, the president.
It's a shame you can't keep one flying. We've got one flying here with the Royal Australian Navy Heritage flight.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Of course. It is a shame. And then there's recent jet news. The Ashburton Aviation Museum down in the South Island has recently got a MiG-17, which is on display there. There's a report on our Wings Over New Zealand forum that there's a Hawker Sea Harrier coming to New Zealand. It's on its way. Try and find out more about that. And the Masterton-based Strike Master unfortunately had a wheels-up incident the other day, and we're very glad that the pilot, Charles Davis, is okay, and I hope he gets his lovely jet flying again soon. Other warbird news? Yeah, ouch, all right. Other warbird news is we've got another P-40E project has turned up at Pioneer Aero at Ardmore for restoration. They must be getting so crowded out with projects there at the moment. There's a lot of things going on, which I must get up there and see them again soon and have a good look over everything and catch up with the guys. But it's really good to see them so busy.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And one that you're very fond of, the Sunderland restoration at Motat, that's actually progressing well, and we've getting lots of updates on the Wings Over New Zealand forum thread. There's a Motat thread that they put up the updates, so have a look there. More news down in Christchurch, the Spitfire Memorial, which is a fiberglass Spitfire that's always been outside, well, since the 1980s has been outside the Christchurch airport, has just been re-erected after full restoration. So that's good to see that back up there. It used to be outside the Brevet Club there, and which was all the old pilots from World War II, and it's good that they're retaining it there, even though most of the pilots are gone now. So it is. And the actually, news just out today on the RNZAF website, the Texan 2s, our new trainers, there's some lovely photos there of six of them in close formation, and apparently four of them are doing a South Island tour next week, so keep an eye out. I think they're going through Christchurch and a few other places. And one of our recent interviewees on the Wings Over New Zealand podcast, Wings Over New Zealand show podcast, I should say, Doug Smith, DFC, has just been awarded the Legion of Honour by France, and it's good to see him receive that amazing honour. The Legion of Honour, of course, is equivalent to sort of the Medal of Honour of the USA or the Victoria Cross of the Commonwealth countries. So, and he's a great guy. He's 97. If you want to hear a really good interview I did with him, episode 81 of the Wings Over New Zealand show. And I'll just run through the upcoming events in the next month or two here in New Zealand. There's a lot coming up because, as I say, it's spring and getting into summer. The 7th and 8th of November, we've got Black Sands flying at Raglan, which I just want to give a shout out to Bruce Cook, who's a really good mate that is organising that. But the more warbirdy type ones, we've got Armistice Day at Omaka on November the 11th. There's the, actually it's not a warbird one, but it's pretty interesting, the Pitt Special 70th Anniversary Aerobatic event at Omaka on the 13th and 15th of November. And of course, we've got the Warbirds Open Day at Ardmore on the 22nd of November, which unfortunately I'll miss as well. And we've got a TVAL, that's the Vintage Aviator Limited, flying weekend on the 28th and 29th of November. And then you've got another one of those in December too, the last weekend of December. And we've got an Amarka flying day on the 6th of December. And just before we hand over to Grant for the Australian Warbird News, I just want to remind people to make sure you keep following the Wings Over New Zealand forum and the Facebook page for the Wings Over New Zealand show, which is facebook.com/WONZ show. And if you want to catch up with recent podcasts from the Wings Over New Zealand show podcast, the most recent ones are Noel Cruz, Part 11, talking about flying caribous, which is really, really cool, and missing aeroplanes in New Zealand. So, Grant, what's happening over across the other side of the Tasman?
Well, we do have a few things going on. I mean, the biggest one is, as you reminded me of earlier today, is that Ross Pay has purchased a Bouchon. That's the Merlin-powered Messerschmitt 109, as per the ones that you saw during the original 1960s Battle of Britain movie. You can tell the Bouchon from a normal 109. It's got a much deeper throat, you might say. The engine installation's a little larger than the usual Messerschmitt. But Ross purchased one of those. It's part of the Connie Edwards collection, and that's where also the Spitfire Mark IX is coming from.
Right, so, that's cool.
Very cool, very cool. There's also there was a while back a Hawker Hunter flying here in Australia. One of the two-seat, the T-75S Hunters. It's undergoing a rebuild here in Victoria after, after it did a gear up landing in 2005 following a gear failure. So that's underway, and it, from the photos I've seen, it's looking pretty good. Hopefully not too long till it's flying again. And also we've got a Hawker Demon, the old, I think that was pretty much between the wars biplane fighter, and a Dap Beaufort, both under restoration in Caboolture. And both coming along very nicely. They've got them both in the same hangar being worked on at the moment.
Nice.
So that's some Warbirds news. And on the events side, we do have a number of fly-ins and things like that. And like you've got the lunch with the Tigers at Luskintyre that occurs every now and again. I was just actually up in the Hunter Valley flying hot air balloons, but I was too busy being social in the afternoons and going to markets with my wife to be able to drop by and say hi to the guys at Luskintyre, unfortunately. So better luck next visit. But the big ones we've got coming up are the Rathmines Catalina Festival on Lake Macquarie, just north of Sydney, and that's on the 25th of October, so this weekend coming. Promises to be pretty good. And then you've got the Armidale Air and Auto Spectacular on the 14th and 15th of November. And, of course, the big one that I believe a certain Kiwi's coming over for, Warbirds Down Under on the 20th and 21st of November.
Oh, yeah. I'm so looking forward to that. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be great. Oh, yeah, I'm really, 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 really looking forward to that. And seeing that Hudson particularly and some of the other Warbirds there.
Yeah, we're going to have Matt Hall's going to be there, and you're also going to have Nigel Lamb will be over. So the two of them will be flying. I imagine Matt will be flying the Mustang he's part owner of, and Nigel will probably be in one of the Spitfires again. But unfortunately, pardon?
Are they going to race them?
No. Last
come on, they're race pilots.
Well, a few years ago, they were involved in a mass flyby. It was the Spitfires, the P-40, the Mustang, and so on. It was just amazing. But, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make it this time. I've got an AGM for one of the groups that I'm heavily involved in. So I'm going to be in Canberra, unfortunately.
Well, that's a shame. I'll certainly give your apology when I get there. It's going to be great. I was actually really hoping that we'd be able to spend the air show weekend together, but oh well.
Yeah, sorry about that, mate. But, unfortunately, they said you've got to have a really good reason, and I told them a really good reason, and they seemed to disagree.
They've got a whole year for an AGM. It's annual.
I know. This is what I was saying. It's like any other weekend, no problem. Yeah. But, anyhow. Yay.
And, speaking of air shows in Australia, this is quite a good point to bring up the recording with Errol Cavett that I did last week. He has just come back from Australia where he popped into an air show over there.
He certainly did.
Are you there, Matt?
Oh, you want me to actually play it now?
Yes, please.
Yeah. No, stand by. It's being finicky. Here he is. Here's Errol.
Yeah, I'm speaking with Errol Cavett from Auckland. Hi, Errol.
G'day.
How's it going? You've just been over to Australia and went to a aviation event over there, didn't you?
Yeah. I was over in Melbourne for work and took the opportunity to pop up to Brisbane and meet 2.5 hours on a 737 to get to the Archer Falls fly-in north of Brisbane.
Right. And what was that like?
Oh, it was great. The main attraction was the Australian Vintage Aviation Society aircraft that came over from Caboolture on the other side of Queensland there. So they had the Fokker DO1 triplane replica, Right. And the Eindecker got trucked up, the Fokker E3.
Excellent. All right, so they truck it up and then they flew it for the air show.
No, didn't fly it. So they didn't fly it locally. So.
Oh, right. So you got to see the Eindecker then, and that was the subject of a show a couple of months ago on the Wings Over New Zealand live show. What's it like in person?
It's great. I actually helped unload it off the trailer, which was great. Got some nice and greasy and so on from just helping them get it off and putting it all back together.
Yep, yep. And what else was there at the fly-in?
There was the triplane. There was the Peat and Pole Air Camper, which is a 1920s design home-built.
Right.
More or less the first home-built design out there. So they've got one of those for just getting people familiar with the how that type of aircraft operates.
Right. That's a really strange-looking thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's blue and high wing, and it just makes its way around the place. What you're hoping for in these little country fly-ins, of course, is whatever random things show up of interest. After being there a couple of hours, what comes over the horizon but a gypsy moth and a leopard moth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the gypsy moth was actually a DH-60M model. That's the metal fuselage frame.
Yep.
And the leopard moth is a DH-85. It's high wing, three seat, looks kind of like an Oster.
Yep, there's not many of those around, eh?
No, not at all.
Well, that's something, that's a real treat to see.
Yeah, there's real icing on the cake. There's also a Spitfire Mark 26 scale replica.
Oh, yep.
And a tiger moth, some auto gyros, about 20 odd aircraft dropped in at some point. It was really good.
Oh, great. And a nice little country atmosphere, I guess.
Supporting the Royal Flying Doctor Service and the local fire brigade and Tavis as well. So
right, it's fantastic.
Fundraiser. And one of those fun fields with a big hill behind it, and you you always land and take off in opposite directions. So there's a hill at the other end.
Right. Brilliant.
Yeah, and the standing rules is you have to do three legs of the circuit before you can come in, so you can get your orientation, but it's a bit tricky.
Okay. So we're looking forward to seeing your photos on the Wings Over New Zealand forum from that, and we've also been planning, Errol, to chat with you about the Vintage Aviator weekends that they've been having, and the next lot of those are coming up soon. So I wonder if you can give us a bit of an overview of the ones that you've been to in the last season.
Yeah, well, I've actually only made it to one of those. I was scheduled for a couple of earlier ones, but weather or life got in the way. Yep. It's just an hour and a half drive out from Wellington. So I flew in and jumped in a rental car, ran on up. And, it started off with the hangar tour. You can walk around the one of the hangars there and get right up close to the aircraft. We've got lots and lots of photos from interesting angles of the replicas and reproductions and originals.
Right.
And then they schedule some flying during the day because these weekends let them schedule their pilots in to have a bit of a practice, and then they come back over the field and do a fly pass and such like. So not so much in a year display, but you certainly get to see them flying.
Right. And this is really based around practice day for the pilots, but it's a chance for the public to get a nice, fairly cheap day out, seeing it all happening.
That's right, and we also get to chat to the pilots. So they once they come in, they are happy to answer all sorts of questions. Right. So that was wonderful. And the day I was there, the weather closed in later on. Well, they just brought all the aircraft in, and including a couple that weren't really expecting to have on public display, but you have to get them in the hangar. And chatted away for another, you know, hour and a half about anything and everything to do with the aircraft. It's wonderful.
Right. Well, that's great. And you're hoping to get down to more of these in the coming summer?
Yes, I noticed the day after Christmas, Boxing Day as we call it here, has one on that weekend, and I'm going to be about 3.5 hours drive away visiting family, so some careful negotiations might be required there. But if not, I'll get into probably January or February one. I'm really looking forward to catching up, hopefully with a couple of new types I haven't seen before. So it's a bit of a lottery each time to see what's going to be there.
Yeah, it is. They like to keep their cards close to their chest there, don't they? And it's always a bit of a surprise what turns up.
Yeah, but it's always a very nice surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great place, good people, and some great flying. So what else could you want?
So I'd just like to thank Ron Field at Archer Falls Airfield for putting the fly-in on, Andrew Carter and Dave Walsh at Tavis for bringing their aircraft along, and also Ree and Dave from Canvas Wings for hosting me in Ipswich just out of Brisbane and driving me on up there.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Errol. It's been a pleasure to hear from you.
No problem.
And if you want to follow up on that, you can actually see those photos online now on the Wings Over New Zealand forum. We're just going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to bring in Glenn Turner from the Number 75 Squadron Association.
Hey, Dave, it's your producer, Matt. I don't know if you saw the news, but I'm stalling right now just so we can put the commercial break in. So this is how you stall. Would you queue up a break? But you know what? Do we even need to take one?
No, we don't. We don't need to take a break. We'll just bring.
I own
we'll
the thing. Do we
on.
Need to stay. We just bring him on. Let's have a. Yeah. It's the opening season. No need for commercials.
Let's go mad.
Yeah, go on.
Okay. Well, I want to welcome to the show Glenn Turner. Hi, Glenn.
Hello, Dave.
How's it going?
It's fine. It's very fine here in New Zealand.
Yes. Yes. Right. Well, I just I want to talk to you to start off with about 75 Squadron itself. It's a very famous squadron, and can you give us a bit of an overview of the squadron history?
Certainly. 75 Squadron initially it had four lives. Initially, it was created in October 1916 during World War One, and it flew B-2s, B-12 Scouts. It was formed and stationed northern England to help prevent the Zeppelins coming across. It got a few sorties up, but never any strikes, hits, or kills. It was disbanded June 1919 and reformed in March 1937 on the RAF build-up, and was introduced as a bomber squadron. So they took on Harrows, Ensigns, and Wellingtons, and for a while, up until April 1940, were pretty much crewing and training up bomber crews. With the outset of World War II, it caught a bunch of New Zealanders in England that were there to bring back to New Zealand the first six of 30 Wellington bombers that the New Zealand government had purchased. Now, the New Zealanders had been there for some time working up and training on these aircraft to fly them back to New Zealand. And with the war starting, the New Zealand government handed them over to the Royal Air Force and said, this is part of our contribution. Now, from the advent of World War II up until April 1940, they were known as the New Zealand Flight. And there was a lot of wondering what were the RAF going to do with these bunch of Kiwis and a bunch of Wellington bombers. There was two options. One was to absorb them into any old squadron that was going. Another was to form their own and have a New Zealand flavour. Well, 75 Bomber Squadron was absorbed into a training unit, and that number plate became available, and it was issued to the New Zealand Flight of, by this time, more than six Wellingtons. And it was then given the bracket, 75 bracket NZ Bracket Squadron Royal Air Force. It was not a New Zealand Air Force squadron, but it was certainly dominated by COs and many ground and air crew members. Now, this was the first of the bracket squadrons, Dave, throughout World War II, and the Royal Air Force and the Commonwealth Forces all named their squadrons by number, and we don't have ITHs, ICANs, or ERDs. We just have number 75 or 75 squadron. So beware anybody that calls it the 75th.
Exactly, yeah. And of course, the air training scheme, the Empire Air Training Scheme, was from then on going to be supplying a lot of the aircrew to that and keeping it quite a Kiwi squadron, wasn't it?
Well, predominantly, the majority of the Commonwealth countries supplied aircrews to England to the effort, and the training scheme in Canada was massive. So the 75 Squadron was predominantly loaded with New Zealanders. In the initial stages, each Wellington had a five-member crew. Now, every time that they lost a Wellington, five Kiwis went down, and nine times out of ten, there were no survivors. It became quite a huge tally for these guys, and therefore they decided to start breaking the crews up with extra manpower from other countries. So predominantly Australian and British aircrew were mingled with the 75s guys, and then they served, the Wellingtons served them right through to October 1942, and they took on then the Stirling Bombers, and they flew the Stirling Bombers until April 44 when they converted to the Lancaster. Now, there's some pretty startling figures from the squadron's participation in World War II and its commitment. They lost 193 aircraft all up. They lost 74 Wellingtons, 72 Stirlings, and 47 Lancasters. They were touted to have had the second highest casualty rate of a bomber squadron in Bomber Command in England for the duration of World War II. They carried out the fourth highest number of bombing raids in Bomber Command. They flew the most sorties in the group that they were stationed with, that's number three group, and they're believed to have dropped the third greatest tonnage of bombs, which is well over 21,500 tons. They also dropped 2,500 tons of mines, and probably the second highest in Bomber Command there. And the casualty rate, they lost 1,139 members of the squadron killed on active service. So of those, 465 were New Zealand Air Force, eight of those were Royal Air Force within the RAF. So substantially wise, they had a good cross-reference of the units. Just pretty briefly there, Royal Air Force, 82. There was one woman's auxiliary Air Force person killed, one auxiliary Air Force, 518 Royal Air Force Volunteer Reserve, 446 Royal New Zealand Air Force, 60 Canadian and 30 Australian Air Force members were killed on 75 bracket NZ bracket squadron 1940-45. A huge amount of personnel to lose.
Sure is, isn't it? It's quite amazing. And, of course, at the end of the war, the Royal Air Force did something quite odd that they didn't do to any other squadron. They allowed New Zealand to take over that number, didn't they?
It's strange you use the word odd. I'd say unique, and I'd say privileged. Because of the commitment of the New Zealand war effort, especially and specifically to Bomber Command, but not only that, also there was many Kiwi flyers within Strike, Coastal and Transport Command. But the number plate of 75 Squadron was handed over to the New Zealand Air Force in April 1946. This was a recognition by the Air Ministry of Britain of the commitment for the New Zealand cause during World War II. Now, that meant that the Royal Air Force will never, ever have a 75 Squadron again, and it became 75 Squadron Royal New Zealand Air Force from 1946 until we were unfortunately disbanded in 2001. But right. from the history of that unit, once it started with New Zealand on October 46, we gained... And New Zealand ordered 80 de Havilland Mosquitoes. and they started arriving from Britain in January 47, finished the whole move December 48. So that was nearly 2 years of flying 80 Mosquitoes out. They lost 4 aircraft and 4 crew on the way. And ironically, out of all those 80, they only ever used about 35 in one squadron. And all the rest, well, I suppose you and your show, Dave, have mentioned the demise of many of our Mosquitoes that never flew operationally here.
Yeah, it's crazy how many they didn't use. But
well, many become chicken coops, and the one down at Ferrymead and Christchurch there used to be a farmer's chicken coop before it was rescued.
Yeah, so, exactly.
They started off there with the Mosquitoes there, Dave, into the fighter attack role. But by April 1952, they had changed to the de Havilland Vampire in the jet era, and they flew those operationally until the squadron was reformed, that went to England to bring to Malaysia the Canberra B-2 bombers. Now, they were on loan from the Royal Air Force. 75 Squadron was stood up at Tengah in Singapore, and they dropped iron bombs for the Malaysian crisis as a light, and were part of the light bomber force for, until 1962. So after that, the New Zealand-owned Canberras entered into Malaysia and Singapore area as number 14 Squadron, and the 75 chaps went back to New Zealand. And they formed the BOCU, the B-O-C-U, the Bomber Occupational Conversion Unit, with their Canberras and Vampires, and until 1969 were flying the Vampire operationally, when the New Zealand government, they decided to replace the Vampire with the McDonnell Douglas Skyhawk. Now, at the time, and even a little later, they were looking at a bunch of aircraft, and the top of the list was the F-4 Phantom.
Right.
The bottom of the list was the A-4 Skyhawk, and we got the A-4. And in between was the Jaguar, the A-7, the Harrier. There was a variety of aircraft that we never did get. However, the Skyhawk certainly served us well. From June 1970, as an operational attack squadron, they were the leading squadron of our air combat force of New Zealand Air Force.
Yep. They were also one of the leading Skyhawk squadrons in the world, weren't they? With various competitions they went to, they usually cleaned up everything.
Well, the speciality of the New Zealand airmen and air crew, and notwithstanding obviously the accolades the gentlemen got during World War II for their valor and for their expertise, but being a small country, we only had one aircraft to do multi-type missions. And in the case of the Skyhawk, our pilots had to shift from doing maritime strike to bomber attack, to combat air patrols, to even and also involved with that was the display teams. So our guys were pretty well trained. They had great skills and ingenuity as well. They used our A4s against the light forces, and even F-16s, F-4s, F-15s, to good advantage. And they come off because of what they could do. And they showed other air forces up. That's for sure, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, they got an upgrade midlife, and basically ended up with an F-16 cockpit on the inside, didn't they?
Well, in the mid-80s, they did another study. So they'd only been in service with New Zealand for some 12 years, and the government of the time said, well, what are we going to do? We've lost a couple. We're either going to buy more or we're going to replace them. And they looked again at Jaguar, Harrier, A7, F-20 Tiger Shark was a forerunner there for a while. And unfortunately, I suppose for trying to get new aircraft, the Australian Navy had just retired their Melbourne, and all the Australian Navy A4Gs and their TA4Gs had become available for sale. The New Zealand Air Force government decided that was the best option. So they purchased a bunch of those. There were 6 A4s and 2 TA4s. 8 wasn't there. So 10 in all. So they came over, and of course the upgrade was chosen to do. So they swept right through all those aircraft. It took about 3 to 4 years. Smith Industries were the main prime contractor, And yeah, they replaced and put some pretty good kit in there with a radar, unheard of for an A4. Unsure to know whether there's any other A4 with a radar. But of course, that allowed LGB and Maverick and Sidewinder pretty good weapons fits for that.
You know, it's really amazing. If you go up to Ardmore and go into the Warbirds hangar, there's a list of all the names of all the Skyhawk pilots who flew the Skyhawk in New Zealand from 1970 when they first arrived through to 2001 when they were disbanded. And you look at those names and most of them now are Warbird pilots or quite well-known people. But the other thing is there's actually probably more people – well, there's definitely more people who have been into space than flew those aircraft. And, you know, 31 years that those aircraft were in service, but the guys seemed to stick with them, didn't they? That was the top level that you could get to, and they probably spent a few years, each of them, flying those Skyhawks. They must have been so experienced in those aircraft.
Well, they certainly found that out. Now, I joined the squadron in 1999 as an armourer sergeant, and I'd spent my time as an armaments technician working around the bomb dump and the carrier bay, seat bay, gun bay. You gain all that kind of knowledge as you're going through your ranks and through your training. And to actually end up on the squadron, you had a good foresight of what your support structure was behind you, behind the hangar, literally for us. And therefore the pilots were a little different. They stayed there. They had a progression of their own rank structures. And those who wanted to progress, they stayed with the Skyhawks for 3 or 4 years, perhaps. And then they moved on to a training role. They went to another aircraft type and sometimes they came back to the A4. Generally though, once you left the squadron, your return would be as perhaps a CO, because you go and do your most of your officers' courses and then come back and are quite privileged to rekindle their flying skills with the A4. But for these particular guys here, the demise of the Air Combat Force began in 1999 when we had a new government. The leader of that party at the time decided that New Zealand did not need an air combat force. Many people obviously said that we should have. History told us we should have, but it was one person's ideal, unfortunately, and we lost out. When we eventually had to close down the three squadrons with the Skyhawks and the Air Mackie aircraft in late 2001, those pilots that flew those jets had choices. The choice was to stay and fly other aircraft within the New Zealand Air Force, and the other choices, one was don't fly at all or an airline, or the other one was to go to another military. And it's well known that a bunch of those guys went on to fly Harrier, Eurofighter and the Red Arrows, specifically in the Royal Air Force, and a good number, including our old COs of these last two squadrons, are still flying in the Australian Air Force. And it's just fabulous to see their spirit. Now, some of our guys went across from the ground crews as well and have done very well for themselves over there on, especially the Australian Air Force, on fast jets. So our expertise and our experience, because we're so small, armament-wise particularly, because we did train on all our multifacets of our trade. And when we met up with like trades from other air forces, they stuck with one particular job for many, many years. And as a technician, we're very much looked at and sought after in many different aviation guises.
Right, right. And, of course, you're talking about the people who left the squadron when it disbanded, and one of your key roles is keeping all those people in touch. They've all gone around the world, and you run the association, the 75 Squadron Association. Tell me a bit about the association.
Well, at the repatriation of the World War II chaps that came back, obviously the wartime things that they saw and did weighed heavy on many of them. But about 1950-odd, a group in New Zealand decided to get together and have a reunion, and that began the 75 Squadron Association as a get-together either annually or every second year. And from that time, successive ex-leaders from the squadron have become the presidents and secretarial role, administrative role. By 2008, the current secretary at that time was very ill, and they needed to replace him. And I'd been to several reunions before that, and this was obviously after the squadron had disbanded. And I was asked if I would step in as secretary, and many people asked me to do that, voted for me, and I became secretary in 2008. Now, from that role, the chap who I succeeded, he was limited to what he had. He had black and white. He had typewriter type stuff. I introduced the 21st century photocopier color computer. So from that, it was now to try and establish the membership, trying to grow the membership, trying to find the World War II guys, particularly for my mind. And for the next, well, since 2008, I have been searching for all of the World War II chaps of 75. I reestablished contact with Bomber Command and Peter Wheeler, and together between us and you too, Dave, we've toured the country independently trying to meet up, talk with these fellows, take their photographs, take their stories, and just generally let them know that, hey, there are some people out there that still care about for us. And I was just counting up how many we've got left of the World War II guys, particularly 35 to 40, known on a couple, but try and contact them every year. 40 of them are still alive in New Zealand. I started out with about 150 when I first came into this role. I've spoken at many funerals. I've given the ode of remembrance and over many, and I've sat and talked with many, as you, Dave, and it's marvelous to be in their company. And from that, I've learnt that there was nothing there that our guys could wear to anniversaries, to meetings, to reunions. So I decided to start designing ties, ladies' scarves, lapel pins, and plaques, and other like. So I've kind of spent about $20,000 of my own money pouring in to try and establish the designs and the breakout of these. And they've been well received, and I've got some lovely photographs of World War II veterans in England and Ireland, particularly wearing my ties of theirs. And I press on because it, to bring a smile to these guys' faces, to have something to hold and put on the wall that's their own. Or when we stand at a reunion and we stand and look down the line of our men's ties, each one has got their own aircraft on it. So you could go right from the Wellington bomber right through to the Skyhawk. And our guys wear these with pride. It's fabulous.
Yeah, and I've seen that myself when I visited the veterans. They've had various things that you've introduced that, you know, that they really do. They bring them out and show me. So that's great. And you've mentioned reunions too, and you've got a reunion coming up next year, haven't you?
Yes, so the October 1st is the 100th anniversary of 75 Squadron formation. So since 2008 reunion, I've organised and put up the last, the 2010 and 2012 reunions at Ohaaki here. Last year's reunion was held down at Wigram, and I was able to remotely assist the people with organizing that. And the 2016 reunion will be held at the Classic Flyers in Tauranga. And there's a team up there that have asked if they could look after this year or next year's one, and they're now deciding on what to do. They have decided with the first week of October weekend as that reunion to coincide with the 100th anniversary. So plans are underway for that. I'm calling now for people to let me know by email as to whether they want or not. And I'll be putting out invoices and reminders soon to try and get people to know. Because, you know, so a lot of these later pilots flying for airlines, and in past years, some of them have come back to me and says, look, I need over 6 months' notice on this kind of thing because I need to put in leave 6 months ahead when they're flying for an airline. That's staggering, really.
Wow. So, and if there's people out there listening who are not members of the association yet and they weren't even aware of it, if they want to get hold of you, what's the best way for them to get hold of you?
Dave, I've been on your Warbird Radio site there, and I see you've put my smiling face there. Thank you very much. But underneath you've got 75 Squadron Facebook and 75 Squadron Association quick links. Now, people can go to the website the 75 Squadron Association website. I must apologize. I created this several years ago, and I have been rather busy with a lot of other things. But on there will be my contact email address. And also, if you wanted to join up with the Facebook site, ask, and I'll come back and ask you what's your interest, because we have had some bad eggs trying to get in. So I kind of vet them that way. So the website will have my contact details. Please let me know if you're a 75er. Now, going back some years, the last 40-odd years, Mr. Colin Hanson we've had Mr. Ron McFarlane have spent 40 years researching the squadron's history. They've come up with a folder of 6,000 names that ever served on 75 from 1916 to 2001. Now, I'm very keen to try and establish to ensure that all those names are correct, all the service numbers, all the service time, the years, and the trades are correct, because some are not. And that is where I need the 75ers that are not known to me or have not contacted me previously to download one of my forms, fill out their details, get it into me, and they're very welcome to become association members. Don't have to. No one's forcing anybody. But they will be assured of having a great time of a get-together when we do have our biennial reunions. Fabulous.
Right. And another thing with the association, you're keeping the history alive of the squadron. And, you know, just recently you and I have been working on a project, which has turned into quite a long-term project because of the circumstances. But we've got this plan to put out a series of shows for the Wings Over New Zealand podcast, Wings Over New Zealand show, the podcast version. And it's the number 75 Squadron story. And we've put the first episode out already. Which is on the show page, and that covers sort of the beginning, the 1916 through to the end of the Wellington era, and we're working now on the next chapters of that. We're planning that at the moment, so there will be more of that, won't there, Glenn? It'd be good.
Well, when I can next get up to your neck of the woods, or even we do this by Skype, that's true, Dave. It's there is a small group of us, let's say, we have the intent is to try and get and record as much of this history as possible. Now, I mentioned Colin Hanson and Ron McFarlane earlier. 40 years of their research has put together a book. Now, there's only ever been one published book on 75 Squadron, and that's Forever Strong by initially Norman Franks was the person there back in 1990. But that's certainly been superseded, and it's certainly not expensively. It's very concise, and perhaps there are things that could be corrected in there. But the history by Colin and Ron has now been moved on to ex-Air Commodore Stu Boys in Tauranga. And he is now committed to publishing this history by DVD. It is just so massive that to try and put it into a glossy coffee table book, it's just too expensive. So so he's going ahead with trying to get this developed for sale on the DVD. And that'll be massive. Now, besides us doing that, there are several others around, both in New Zealand and in England, that are also trying to amass history, whether it be personal or the squadron. And myself, I've embarked on a project of photographing all of the grave sites of those that are buried in Europe and England. In the last 5 or 6 years, I have hired a car and driven around these places. We know where each one is by name, and I have that as a spreadsheet. And I've photographed every 75 Squadron grave that I can get to so far. Just in June and July, I did all of Denmark and Sweden. I did a whole lot around England and some in France and Belgium. So I've got a whole bunch more to do there. And that's all on my own bat. That's just something I want to do, and I'll eventually load that up onto my website too, so people can see our guys. Now, it's been done before, but people have chosen New Zealand gravestones, not 75ers. I'm just solely focusing on that. And besides the photographic recording, I've attended quite a few European and English commemorative services for our World War II guys. And just in May, I was part of Guy Lepellier's commemoration of a Stirling in Belgium. And between myself and several others, we helped edit his manual, because French, Belgian into English doesn't go good at times. And besides him, there's been several other Lancaster, Wellington and Stirling commemorations. But these guys in Holland, Belgium, France, they worship our guys of the fallen, and they make sure their graves are tended well. The Commonwealth War graves obviously do that for others, but those that are in churchyards, they remember the sacrifices our guys made. And it's the same for many American downed airmen as well, not just the Commonwealth. So it's fabulous to sit and talk with these guys and see how they look after our guys' graves, not just from my point of view, not just the Royal Air Force, but the majority of the Kiwi guys that have fallen. And there might only be one gravestone in a little graveyard, not just the mass graves you kind of see. But I've certainly seen a lot now, and I've probably only got about 100 to get, and that's mainly around the outskirts of France. So it's going to be a big trip.
That's real dedication, and I'm sure that everyone out there that's connected with the Air Force really appreciates the work you're doing. I just want to turn now, Glenn, to something else, which is unconnected but a result of your time on the squadron. And that's what you're doing now, because you've left the Air Force. You're no longer an armourer with the Air Force, but you're working on ejection seats. And a lot of the Warbird guys out there in America and around the world are probably interested in your new business. So tell us about that.
Certainly, Dave. I must kind of also admit that it's not kind of new, really. The photograph you've put up there, which I've got on my Facebook page, is me sitting inside ZKJIL, which is a Hawker Hunter Singaporean. Mr. David Phillips purchased that aircraft in 1996 after the Singaporeans sold them off, and this and a two-seater aircraft, which are now both at Tauranga, were brought into the country in 97. I was asked to see if I can make that into a live ejection seat for the owners. It took me 4 years to sort that out, and it had never been done in New Zealand before, a live seat, civilian-wise. So I talked with Civil Aviation, and they had no rules. So I wrote a set up, and they published them. So that allowed me to have the ability to do this the right way, for ensuring that the civil aviation world accepted a live civilian ejection seat. And it moved on from there to also, in my travels, I ended up at Archer Field in Australia and talked with CASA. They accepted my seat serial, my maintenance approval. The New Zealand CAA gave me, so that's been accepted in Canada when I helped Andre Lorty get Northern Lights, the first six hunters over there, 2003, and some more stuff in Australia when we lost our Skyhawks. The guy that was trying to do a single seat Hawker Hunter sister ship to ZK Jill, flying out of Bankstown and Archerfield, he was trying to do a fly-off to see if he could buy the six Chilean hunters and fly them for the Royal Australian Navy in replace of our Skyhawks. Well, that didn't happen, unfortunately, but I certainly managed to get the seat done. So from there, unfortunately, Martin Baker are now no longer supporting the vintage and classic aircraft seats. So there's a new road to go from there. But to follow on from and getting away from Martin Baker's side of things, because there are many different kinds of ejection seats about out there, when the New Zealand Skyhawks were sold to Draken in Florida 2013, I was asked if I could help. And I went over to Florida several times, and as a consultant, I was able to help them get their seats live for their first test flying. And as of being on the squadron right to the last bitter day, and then I was the squadron standard bearer with Mike as parading with the standard as we had to lay it up on the spammer day, I was quite chuffed to see Draken put our aircraft in the air and with our help. So that was pretty mighty. So from there, I met a couple of chaps whom formed a new company called Task Aerospace in Arizona, in Mesa. And they have asked me to do some consulting work for them, and it's helping with more Escapac Skyhawk ejection seats for another customer. So I'm very hopeful that with Task Aerospace, I can help out with what these guys are trying to achieve, and that is the Warbird and major companies who are out there, the likes of Draken for sure and Top Aces, that they need a professional support network of technical people. And I'm quite chuffed to actually be part of Task Aerospace's team and achieving that. Yeah, it's fabulous. But I come back to New Zealand and carry on with my association stuff and the records and the accounts and the reunion organization. When Task Aerospace need me for another consultancy role, I'll avail myself with them.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Glenn. It's been a pleasure to talk to you today. And I'll be in touch, obviously, and you might get a few more members out of this today.
Thanks, Dave. Two things there. The membership is a must for us. We must find more people out there that would like to enjoy the camaraderie again with us, with 75 Squadron and its association. And secondly, for Warbird operating people, there is a solution to not a cold seat if you want, and Task Aerospace certainly can advise on that aspect. So, Dave, I thank you very much for this opportunity, and thank you very much for the listeners out there, and we hope we can have a chat again.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks very much. And I just want to remind listeners that hopefully next month when the show comes back, I will be in Australia and hopefully broadcasting from there. I'm going to be doing the big Wings Over Australia tour, and so long as everything comes together, I'll be broadcasting from Australia. So it'll be my first international show. Excellent. Well, cool. Hopefully we'll hear from you all next time.